Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Good morning,
Roto Experts.
To the end zone! It's caught! Touchdown! Oh my God!
The mark of fantasy excellence.
It's caught for a touchdown!
You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts in the morning.
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
All right, welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Roto Experts in the Morning. Joe Galina, along with my buddy George Kurtz, Sean Engel, producing our show, keeping us flying straight. How's it going there, George? We're talking starting pitching.
Starting pitching is important. I mean, Joe, when you draft, are you a starting pitching guy? It used to be, Joe, when I used to play. Probably this changed, I would say, once again, 5, 6, 7 years ago. I used to take one starting pitcher maybe the first 5 rounds. Now it's at least 2, and sometimes it could be more depending on who falls to me. Now I think I've grown up with starting pitching. You know, it used to be, they only account for 4 of the 5 categories. Obviously, you're not going to get any saves from a starter. But now with a dearth of great pitching, I think you have to get at least 1 ace, if not 2.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I would like to get a starting pitcher within my first 2 picks, but at least 1 within the first 3 rounds. And by the 5th round, I'd like to have at least 2. And, it's becoming interesting that, if you wait, a couple of guys that I end up deciding whether or not to take is Jameson Taillon from the Pirates, or Jack Flaherty comes up there, and then you have maybe Jose Berrios in that little turn there, probably in the 3rd or 4th round. But one guy that we didn't talk about, we talked about Kershaw. What do you think about Buehler? Where does he fit in into your tier? And do you think that he could take that giant leap forward with the Dodgers next year?
Buehler.
Yeah.
it's an automatic.
You can't help yourself. Yes. Yeah,
because the younger generation has no idea what we're talking about, but that's fine. Watch a movie.
Got to check it out. Yeah.
Okay,
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yeah,
it's a fantastic, fantastic movie.
Yes, absolutely.
probably my favorite Matthew Broderick flick.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. What else did he do?
War Games is good.
Yeah.
But I'm still gonna go with I'm gonna go with Ferris Bueller's Day Off. All right. As far as Buehler is concerned, I think he's top. I think he's the top 20 guy for me. I think he's top 20 pretty easily for me. I do worry with younger players. Is there going to be a pitch limit on innings count later on in the season? That sort of thing. There, I think the Dodgers could be careful with them if they choose. And what I mean by that is, I'm not so sure how competitive this division is going to be. For the Dodgers, where Arizona's not the same team, right? San Diego's still rebuilding, quickly rebuilding, but still rebuilding. Giants, I don't think, are anywhere near. Colorado, are they ready to really compete for the division, or just the wild card again? Are they really ready to compete with the Dodgers? I don't know. I don't think so. And I always hate the moves that the Rockies make during the offseason. It's always strange to me here. So I think the Dodgers could be careful with Buehler should they choose. But it's also for these reasons that I think Buehler becomes even more valuable. Because he should have a very good year. He's a very good pitcher anyway, but he's in a weaker division. It's not the National League East. It's not the Central. It's the West. It's probably the worst division in the National League. So I like Buehler a bunch. He's a top 20 guy for me. I'm not afraid to add him.
Would you feel comfortable if he was like your first pitcher off the board?
Oh,
you're on your team. Yeah,
I'm thinking. Comfortable? Probably not comfortable. Because like I said, mm-hmm. I don't have him top 10. I have him top 20.
Right.
Which means he's probably going round four, round five. So, I mean, listen, it can easily happen. That if for me, for that to happen, it means, oh, man, these hitters fell to me. And I had no choice. You know, first round, obviously, yeah, you took a hitter. Second round, you know, okay, maybe Lindor then fell to me in the third round. I had to grab him. You know, I could see it happening, yes, but it would not be my plan. You know, mm-hmm. it would not be my plan. You know, you're looking at him in, like I said, I have him top 20. I have him around guys like you mentioned Trevor Bauer earlier. You know, Patrick Corbin, Blake mm-hmm. Snell. I have him all around. I mean, I would like all these guys, but I like them all, Joe, as my number twos. You know, I'm hoping mm-hmm. I got, you know, the Carrasco, Severino, no, obviously the great guys before that. I'm hoping I got one of those guys, and he's my number two. If he's my number one, it also almost means certainly that my next pick is also going to be a pitcher.
Right. A couple of guys in labor waited on pitching. You got Paul Spora from Fangraphs, but Jason Collette, they waited till the fifth round to take a pitcher, and they ended up with Zach Wheeler as the number one guy. Now, Zach Wheeler, man, he really came on late in the season. You know, it took him a while to kind of heal fully from his Tommy John surgery. But I'll ask you the same thing I asked you about, Bueller. I mean, what do you think about the way that their team shaped out? Are you happy with maybe a Wheeler, you know, as your number one pitcher? Let's see what that allowed them to do. I mean, first pick for them was Aaron Judge, right? Aaron Judge, you know, 35-plus home runs. Goldschmidt, now on St. Louis. Tommy Pham was their third pick. A lot of people high on Tommy Pham. Some power, some speed. Now with the Rays. And then the fourth round, their fourth pick, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And let me take an aside with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Did you see that video of him that the people posted on Twitter? Of him just like walking out. He was just walking out of the clubhouse. And I didn't realize what a big man he was, you know? He's a real big guy. And,
he's a DH waiting to happen, by the way.
Yeah.
He's an awful third baseman. He's not staying in the field. Mm-hmm. I mean, once again, they didn't have.
When I say big, I'm kind of, you know, I don't want to say. I was almost like surprised at how big he was. And I don't mean like, you know, muscular big. Now, the guy, look, he's a hitting machine and whatnot. But like, I'd be like a little worried. Like if I was, if I had a dynasty team looking at him physically, I think I'd rather have Eloy Jimenez than the Guerrero. I know that they play two different positions and whatnot, but it's just a little concerning. Just the eye test.
Oh, and it should be. It should be concerning because he's not in the greatest shape. You mentioned he's a hitting machine. And mm-hmm. he's got that gene from his dad, and it's fantastic because Lord knows his dad was fun to watch. His dad never met a pitch he didn't like to swing at. And he's got that gene. You know, he can hit, but, mm-hmm. you know, he's a big man's putting it nicely. I mean, he's not in the greatest shape.
Yeah, I'm trying to be polite. Yeah.
He's got a very big backside. And mm-hmm. That's a big booty, boys and girls. All right, he's got a big caboose, he's not going to be able to play the field. He's just not going not have any.
Yeah, long term, you're right. Long term, he looks like a DH.
Long term, he's a DH. I'm maybe a first baseman, but that's sort of downgrading first baseman. You know, denigrating actually first baseman when you think anybody can just play first base. He'd have some problems there as well. You know, so that's going to be the issue there. He's going to hit. They're not going to start him. They're going to wait a couple of weeks, you know, so they get that extra year, blah, 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 whatever.
The Super 2, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Super 2, right. So it's idiotic, mm-hmm. but they're going to wait that. But you're talking, would it shock me if he hits 40 home runs this year? It wouldn't. For a bunch mm-hmm. of reasons. One, the ball flies
wow,
out of the
40, rush, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Which, all right. The man can hit. The ball flies out of that ballpark, and they're mm-hmm. a terrible team, so they're going to be trailing. There's going to be a lot of seven, you know, they're trailing 7-2. He hits a home run in the eighth inning because teams are going to pitch to him because they're going to be up 5-6 runs. They're not going to care. About a solo home run. You know, they're just not going to care. He's going to get pitched to. But I love the player. Love him. Like I said, mm-hmm. he can hit. But as far as the real baseball world, position's going to be a problem. And he's not the only one. I was discussing with a friend of mine last night, Alonso of the Mets, and where they're going to end up playing him. You know, once again, is he a DH way going to happen? Same thing. Guys can't field. But
news brief that what are the Mets going to say? But they say, wow, his defense looks like it's improved. And, you know, with that hitting tool, the Mets are going to have, what, Todd Frazier? that's what who's penciled in as their opening day first baseman. But I would love to see Alonso, you know, get his shot this year.
I mean, I told a friend. I think Alonso should get his shot. I think you need to see your prospects fail before you give up on them. I don't care. I mean, I really don't care if the Mets say his defense has improved. What are they going to say? Oh, my God, this guy sucks. This guy has hands of stone. You know, he can't move.
Of course,
he can't
catch anything. I know,
Of course they're not going to say that. So they're going to say it's improved. It's funny. Another guy, person, I don't know who this person is, which I'll have to look up if he's in the industry or not. But according to him, scouts have said that Alonso's defense has improved immensely, which I find interesting because I haven't read any of these reports that his scout that his defense has improved. Okay, I see who it is. It's a Mets beat writer for MLB.com. So I assume he's right about some scouts. But, you know, the first scout I looked at was Keith Law. And what he rated, and he still hasn't rated as a 40 defender who's once again a DH waiting to happen, probably have to play in the American League. But that being said, I think he still needs to prove that he can't catch that at the major league level. I think he needs to play. But my problem with Alonso and the Mets is this. All right, you got Frazier at third, Rosario at short, Cano at second, and you sign Jed Lowry. If you're playing Alonso at first, that means one of those guys I just mentioned and not Rosario. So one of Frazier, Cano, and Lowry has to sit every game. Someone's not going to be happy. And generally, you know, if Alonso gets off to any kind of a slow start, you're going to see Lowry at third, Rosario at short, Cano at second, Todd Frazier at first. That's just what's going to happen. Every team always gives the benefit of the doubt to the veteran, not the rookie. You know, I think that's what's going to happen. That's why I didn't like the signing of Lowry for the Mets. I would have preferred them not sign Lowry. I understand it gives you great depth, you know, and as soon as an injury happens, this problem solves itself, right? So that's great once an injury happens. But until then, someone's unhappy. I just would have liked to have seen Alonso play. You know, granted, you find out in mid-May he can't catch. He is terrible at first base. He can't move. He has no range. Well, then you know. And then you could try and move him to an American League team eventually, you know, and see what you can get for him, you know, especially if he's hitting home runs. But until then, I want to see the kid play. And it's just the way I am. I mean, you want cost certainty? You want to save on the cap and don't have to pay all these gazillion dollars? Find out if your kids can play.
Well, another guy you didn't mention on the Mets, since we're talking Mets for a second, Jeff McNeil, you know, came up, had a decent second half for the Mets, and they're penciling him in as their left fielder against righties. And basically, so he hasn't played the outfield since his college days, but I liked what I saw out of him last year. So Mets have a lot of moving parts. It's going to be an interesting team. You see them improving a lot? I mean, a lot of experts think they've made some changes that are really going to help them bounce back.
I think the Mets have improved immensely. I do. You know, I like the Mets. I'm not saying I agree with the moves. I don't necessarily agree with the moves that BVW made, mainly because you've sort of mortgaged the future. These prospects he gave up are legit prospects. You know, Seattle did well in that deal to get Kalanick and I forget the other guy's name, and trade Diaz and Cano. And that's imagine the salary you took on. You know, once again, talking to a friend of mine, he's a big Mets fan. He's not in the industry, but he's very knowledgeable. He hates it, the deals, because he feels the same way, you know, see what the kids could have done here. So I think it depends, as a Met fan, how you look at it. You know, if you wanted to become good, better right away, well, you are. You are. Adding Cano, adding Diaz, adding these players, you are much better than you were last year. I think you are a playoff contender. Like I said, the Mets, Phillies, Braves, Nationals, they're going to kill each other in the National League East. You know, they truly are. It's going to be a fun division to watch here. That Mets pitching staff is legit. You know, Syndergaard, DeGrom, Wheeler, Mats. You know,
Mats making a comeback.
Right. If these guys between them, you'd like 120 starts. That'd be in a perfect world, right? All right, that's not going to happen. But if they can make somewhere around triple digits, somewhere around 100 starts, it wouldn't shock me if they win that division. Wouldn't shock me at all. They still have some problems. They don't believe in defense. That's fairly obvious, right? Alonso at first base. You mentioned McNeil going to the outfield where he's never played. They don't believe in defense. And they haven't for years. You know, they've sacrificed that. They haven't. When was the last time the Mets had a center fielder? I mean, a true center fielder. It's been a long time. Ligaris was sort
Tommy
of that
Agee.
Player, but he can't stay healthy. Mookie Wilson. It's been a long time here. So they're going with the strikeouts. At DeGrom, Syndergaard, these guys are all going to strike out. you know, maybe 35-40% of the batters they face. Maybe that works out. Maybe it doesn't. But I think they're an improved team. I do. They still have issues on offense. I said I don't believe in Todd Frazier. I don't. You know, that sort of thing. McNeil.
Sad. You got to love him just, you know, from his the way he carries himself. This guy really, I mean, home run or bust.
Yeah, that's what he is. Yeah. That is what he is. That's why, once again, McNeil, I would have liked to see McNeil get a shot, too. I wouldn't have traded for Cano. Even though I admit Cano's a better player at this point. But McNeil, you said it. He sort of came out of nowhere for the Mets. I mean, he wasn't ever really a top prospect, but all of a sudden he can hit.
Yeah.
I would have liked for them to have seen what he could do. Once again, right. Core certainty, he could have been your second baseman. We didn't have to worry about this. Or even your third baseman. You know, so I would have liked to have seen that. Now they're moving him to the outfield, which means he's not going to be getting those infield reps. It's just strange. With how the Mets do go about things is strange sometimes. But that being said, I think they're a much better team this season. I think they will be in the wild card hunt, if not the hunt for a division lead. You know, they're a team that's, in my mind, equivalent to the Nationals. It's very close. Pitching staff is really... They're both very good. The offense without Harper on the Nationals is about, I would give the edge to the Nationals, but it's not a huge edge there. It's not.
Right.
So this division, if you're a baseball fan, is going to be so much fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But we kind of got a little off track, and I was just taking a look at the Fangraphs labor team, right? So they got Judge, Goldschmidt, Pham, and Guerrero, and then in the fifth round they took Wheeler. I mean, in sacrificing going for, let's say, the prototypical ace, right? I mean, do you think it was worth it by putting together, you know? So Judge, you pencil in for 35 home runs, Goldschmidt 30, what, Pham, you know, 25 maybe, and maybe another 15 steals. And, you know, you pencil in Guerrero, you said he could 40. I would say maybe 25 is more what he could give you. But was it worth it, you think, to hold off on pitching? I mean, can you do it?
Well, I can tell you one thing. Fangraphs did not take Guerrero in round four for 25 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. They're expecting 40.
Right. Yeah,
that's fairly obvious. You don't draft anybody.
Well, Steamer has him for about 22.
Yeah, he'll hit 22 in a month. All right, this is what the guy does. He's going to hit home runs. The problem with taking Wheeler as your first pitcher is he had to follow him up next with David Price. Then he went Doolittle. You always have to take a lot of pitches after that. They didn't go pitching heavy at all. I'm looking at their roster here.
Yeah,
they're going to have problems in the pitching. They're going to have a lot of problems in the pitching department. I'm wondering if this is we have to ask, but I wonder if this is their strategy to go hitting over pitching.
Yeah. All right, well, we come back. Another team that went hitting over pitching in labor, and we'll continue breaking down some fantasy baseball.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto Millionaire.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Roto Experts in the Morning. Little Credence bringing us back. Like Credence there, George? With John Fogerty?
Yeah, I'm a CCR and a John Fogerty guy, yeah. Fogerty, we'll be thinking about his song in a couple of weeks, right?
Center field, right?
Put me in, coach.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. So we were talking fantasy baseball, talking about a couple of teams in the labor draft that held off on taking pitching until we had the Fangraphs team that waited to the fifth round. Quick look at Scott Pianowski from Yahoo Sports. He waited till the sixth round before he took his first pitch. It took Miles Mikolas. love the Miles Mikolas story from last season. Came back to the majors after spending three seasons in Japan and really polished his craft there. Not really your prototypical, you know, pitcher where he doesn't strike out many, right? Only 6.5 strikeouts per nine last year, but the control was his thing. Really developed that while he was overseas. 1.3 walk per nine, 18-4 last season, 2.83 ERA. Do you think we're going to see, I mean, I guess we're going to have to see a little bit of regression probably, right? But do you think that he could maintain at least, you know, to be an effective pitcher, you know, without major league hitters catching up to him this season there, George?
I mean, listen, he went in, what, round six here for Scott. We look at Scott's team. This must have been a strategy to wait because, once again, he didn't take pitches after that either. I mean, he took his first pitcher in round six, his next pitcher not to round 11. So this had to be a strategy of Scott, which is funny because when I look at his team, it looks like players just fell to him and he had to take them, which is fine. J.D. Martinez, round one. Bregman, round two. Benintendi, round three. Correa, round four. I have no problem with taking those guys. None. You know, I think they all are a good value.
What do you think about Correa this year, by the way? I mean, you know, he burst onto the scene a couple of years ago. I mean, I don't think he's going to steal bases the way we thought he would, you know, but the power bat, I think, is there. What are you thinking about Correa?
I think he has a bounce back year. I have no problem with Carlos Correa either. You're right about the stolen bases, but that's really throughout baseball. No one steals bases anymore. And it's just it's still the sabermetrics that you have to be, you know, the teams don't want to give up that out because they don't want to lose the home run. You know, the chance for the home run thing, a two-run homer is more important than the stolen base for a single, you know, because mainly it seems to be easier to hit a home run than it does to hit a single nowadays. So I think that plays into it here. So I think Correa does bounce back. I think he's going to have a fine year. Scott got him in round four. I think his ADP right now is 57 or something silly like that. So I think he bounced back. I think he'll be fine. Health. Stay healthy. I mean, the last 2 years, he's missed about 50 games a year. He has to stay healthy. I mean, hopefully he's above that, but I have no problem with the pick. As far as Mikolas is concerned, like I said, for Scott, so I'm not denigrating Scott's team. I assume this was a strategy of his. Scott's a very good player. There's no, I think he had a certain strategy coming in, or things just didn't work out. And once he took a whole bunch of hitters, he got, screw it, I'm going to keep taking hitters and dominate those categories. I'll worry about pitching during the year, which is something I can't do, but it can be done as long as you're going to pay a lot of attention and you can get the right moves during the season, get the right guys, the hot guys coming out. Mikolas. He's a big man. You know, he's 6'5", 220. You know, he's going to be 31 years old during the season. You mentioned he pitched overseas. People thought that he might be good last year, but not to the degree that he was. You know, can he do it again? There'll be a lot of film on him now. You know, people watching him, seeing, you know, what his tendencies are, what he likes to throw. Now, this is not a guy who, you know, has a blazing fastball. He throws the ball decently hard, about 90, almost a little less than 94 miles an hour. But I think, there's no way I want him as my starting pitching one. I have him as a starting pitcher three. You know, he's on that 3-4 border, actually, of a SP there. So I trust him to a degree. I think St. Louis is going to be a good team again, so I like that. I think St. Louis, the Brewers, and the Cubs are the class of that division. Reds are coming on as well. Pirates aren't a terrible team, but they have some issues now. But it is a tough division here, so I think that hurts them as well. The ballpark is sort of neutral, so I'm not really worried about that. So I do like the player, but if you're asking me if I expect a 2.83 ERA again and a 1.07 whip, no. That was fantastic. I can't expect that. I think the ERA goes up maybe a half run, maybe three quarters of a run. You know, and for where I'm drafting him, by the way, Joe, I wouldn't complain about that. If I thought he's going to be 2.83 and 1.07 again, I'd have him as a top 15 pitcher. I don't. You know, so I'm expecting those numbers. He went 18-4. We know wins can be a little finicky. So I expect the numbers to regress a little bit. I think when we hear the word regress, we think, oh, bad. Regress just means he's not going to have the fantastic year he had last year. I think he'll have a good year. So I'm not afraid to take him, but I'm not taking him expecting last year's numbers.
Yeah, it kind of almost reminds me of Hendricks, Kyle Hendricks from the Cubs. You know, a guy not really overpowering, just you know, kind of a control pitcher, but just gets the job done. I mean, Hendricks isn't the pitcher that he was just a few years ago, but you know, I'm with you. I think that he's going to be successful this year. Mikolas will, But I mean, you can't. If you see a little bit of regression, I wouldn't be surprised. But so that's that. And I don't want to get off of pitching before we talk about Yankees had some news yesterday where CC Sabathia announced that this would be his last season in the major leagues. And you know, you and I are very familiar with CC Sabathia. Came onto the Yankees, signed him, helped them win a World Series in 2009, and I guess you know, became over the years became like a real leader in that clubhouse there, George. And I guess it was never more evident than you know, last season when you know, he was faced with that he needed to pitch seven innings in a game late last season against the Rays in order for a $500,000 bonus to kick in, and he intentionally hit a Rays player just to, you know, get back on you know a little retaliation to back up his team, and he didn't care that that he, you know, he ended up getting ejected from the game and missing the bonus by two innings. And the Yankees ended up, I think they paid him the $500K anyway. But that kind of tells you that, you know, the kind of guy he was in that clubhouse, kind of like a team guy, you know, and a leader. And by the way, third overall in career strikeouts by a lefty pitcher behind Randy Johnson and Steve Carlton.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to CC, what you said last year about him, what he did, he was completely correct. Yankee player got drilled. I forget who it was. It was obviously on purpose. And CC came back the next inning and drilled the Rays. And as he's walking off, he said, "That's for you, bitch." You know, so, he let him know that that was on purpose. Mm-hmm. There was no doubt that was on purpose. He was doing it to get back. And as you said, the fact that he did it, I'm not going to say he definitely knew, but I'm sure he knew that he was going to miss that bonus. You know, as in $500,000 a CC may not mean much. He's made $1 million in his life, but still, to do that was, in my mind, extremely impressive. The Yankees did do the right thing. They paid him anyway, that bonus. I thought it was good all around. I am not a proponent, Joe, of drilling people. I am not. You know, I think it's idiotic that player that pitches drill hitters on purpose. You know, I mentioned I did pitch, and yes, every now and then you might. I don't think I ever hit anybody on purpose, but yeah, I definitely threw inside to back people off or send a message. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I ever hit anybody on purpose. I mean, and I wasn't throwing anywhere near as hard as these guys are. You can ruin somebody's career. You can kill somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's just I don't like it, especially in the American League where the pitchers don't hit. You know, you're, because if I'm a hitter. And, you know, and my pitcher drills somebody, and now I'm getting hit because he did it, because he doesn't step up in the plate. I'm pissed. And I'm talking to that guy in the clubhouse. You know, if you ain't got the guts, you know, you don't have to go stand up there, then stop doing that crap. You know, this thing is idiotic. If I'm the shortstop, the second baseman, and now this guy's coming in spikes high trying to send me into left field, you know, I said I'm ticked off. You know, and that's generally how that sort of stuff ends, by the way. So I thought what CC did was great. I did. He announced his retirement yesterday. You know, I think the question now will be, after he retires, is he a Hall of Famer?
I was going to ask you that. Yeah, and personally, I think he is. You know, one of the few guys that you know, he's basically we'll call him the last of the Mohicans in terms of, you know, a guy that just every season gave you, you know, 230 innings pitched. I mean, you look at what he did when he got traded midseason from Cleveland to Milwaukee. That run in 2008, you know, he was 11-2 in 17 starts. Took the ball on short rest, 3 days rest, you know, more than once. And then, you know, he had that that period 2009 to 2011 where he won, you know, 19 games twice and another 21 games, helped lead the Yankees to a World Series. When you look at his overall career ERA, I mean, 3.7 is very good. I mean, it's not, you know, lights out, but, you know, pitching 19 years, it's definitely something you know, it's definitely, you know, worth noting. And he's going to have over 3,000 strikeouts at the end of his career. And you know, for a period, he was considered probably one of the top three pitchers in baseball, you know, at his peak. You know, and what do you consider his peak? Maybe, I don't know, maybe 2007 to 2011 or 12. I don't know. I know you're a tough grader when it comes to Hall of Famers, George, but what do you think?
Well, you said it. I am a tough grader. In my mind, if I have to think about it, you're not in. It's just that simple. I think it's for the great of the great. And I listen, I like CeCe. I do. I like him a lot, but I'm probably not putting him in. I mean, like I said, for me, it's the greatest of the great. I've said it before, I would take guys out before I put them in. So for me, probably more than likely not. You know, that being said, do I think he's better than some of the pitchers who've gotten in? I do. You know, I do. You know, you mentioned all the relevant numbers. He's going to have more than 250 wins. I know wins isn't really a it really isn't any kind of judgment on anything. But as far as the sexy numbers we like, he's got 246 now. He'll have around 255, 260 when it all ends here. You mentioned he will have over 3,000 strikeouts. He's 14 short. That sort of is a magic number. It's not a big-time magic number, but it's still a magic number. The innings pitched, you know, he'll have about 3,500, 3,600. Well, not 36, but he could have 36, yeah. He'll have about 3,600 innings pitched. That's impressive. Everything you said is true. I mean, he's been a warrior. He's taken the ball on 3 days. He's done really whatever you could have asked. We just discussed what kind of teammate he is. So I like CeCe a lot, a whole lot. But the problem is it's just how I judge things. You know, I'm a Yankee fan. I wouldn't have put Mike Wessinger in either. Even though I give
I was going to ask you about
so
him.
Credit.
Believe it or not, the numbers are fairly close.
They are. And I would give Wessinger a little bump because he pitched his entire career in the American League East. Yeah, it's Yankee Stadium. It's Fenway Park. That's Camden Yards, Toronto, where the ball flies out of all these ballparks, so it's tougher. And generally, I think through his whole career, I know he pitched for the Yankees, but the Yankees and Boston were always very good teams. Tough to face them when you're facing him 19 times, you know, when your team's facing him 19 times a year. But I don't think he was a Hall of Famer either. You know, I just think when it comes down to it, you know, if I need somebody for one game, I'm not taking either one of these guys. There are plenty of other Hall of Famers that would take above them easily. Now, what I'm even thinking about these two, they were very good pitchers in their time. I don't think they were the greatest of the great. I don't. So that's what. But that being said, I fully admit I am a tough grader. I know that. This is all sports. You know, I think you need to be the greatest of the great to get into the Hall of Fame. I will say this for the players who've gotten in over the past 5-10 years. Yeah. CeCe is a Hall of Famer. Wessinger is a Hall of Famer. But I wouldn't put them in my Hall of Fame. I can't do it.
Yeah. You know, so I was looking at Jack Morris's numbers. I think he had like a 3.9 ERA, if I'm not mistaken. And I guess you have to take a look at, you know, the era that these guys played in, whether or not, you know, and I tried to bring it up when I was talking about CeCe, that, you know, the period of time that he was considered one of the top-notch pitchers in baseball. And, you know, look, you know, the guys that we're talking about, like Mussina and CeCe, they played through the steroid era, right? They're old enough to have played through that. But then you take a look at, you know, if you compare them to, let's say, a Bob Gibson. I have Bob Gibson's numbers over here. You know, 251 wins, you know, 2.91 career ERA, and 3,117 strikeouts. But, you know, he played from 59 and he retired in 75. But, you know, it was a different era, right? And then, you know, baseball expansion too, you take into consideration, you know, it's just like a different time. But I respect what you say in terms of, you know, I feel that the Baseball Hall of Fame is definitely watered down, and you don't want to disparage anybody, but, and you know,
it's the whole of very good.
Yeah. I mean, when a guy, and now we're talking hitters now, right? I mean, if Harold Baines, how does this guy, you know, I mean, he was a very nice player, but I don't know, 289 batting average. And, you know, he doesn't hit any of the magical numbers for me. You know, he doesn't have the 400 home runs. A very, very nice player, you know. And I think that if you put Harold Baines in there, how could you justify not having a Fred McGriff in there, you know? So.
You know how I feel. It's the Hall of Very Good. I'd give it up on the Hall of Fame years ago. So the Harold Baines thing didn't push me over the edge. I just laughed at that. And I liked Harold Baines. Yeah. He's a nice hitter.
Yeah.
Certainly a hitter you'd want on your team. But, you know, as soon as I heard that he made the Hall of Fame, I just started to laugh. I mean, I just started to laugh. He got in there, but you mentioned before, he got in there before Edgar Martinez. I mean, that's a joke. Yeah. You know, that's just a joke. that happened here. And there's many other players there. I mean, it's idiotic. Like I said, it's all political now. It's all who you know, who you can get in. You know, it's just I've given up on it. And like I said, this is not just baseball. This is football. You know, hockey to a lesser extent. Hockey hasn't totally screwed it up yet, but they'll get there. Yeah, they all do. You know, these things where somebody has to get in every year. Listen, no, they don't. You get in if you deserve to get in. You know, if mm-hmm. nobody gets in a year, then guess what? Yeah, Canton's going to be a little quiet that year. You know, or whatever. I just think it's silly. I truly just think it's silly. And I used to love it. You know, I don't get upset about the Hall of Fame. I don't get upset about the Cy Young voting, the MVP voting. I understand what it is.
The All-Star game. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that I've given up a long time ago. You know, as soon as you heard that a player from every team has to get in, well, then it's not an All-Star game anymore. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's not. You know, because you're not having the best players anymore. It's just all this stuff. It's just for talking points. I'll talk about it forever. I'll debate about it forever. But to say that it upsets me, no, I've given up on it.
Yes or no, did it bother you that Mariano got in as a unanimous, with a unanimous vote at all?
The funny thing is, I thought they could have, if they wanted to, they could have had an excuse not to put Rivera in unanimously.
We'll come back, talk more baseball.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Heard Judas Priest in a while. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning. You got Joe Galina. Follow me at Joe Galina. Follow my buddy George Kurtz at George Kurtz. What's going on, George? You big fan of Judas Priest?
I mean, I like Judas Priest, a couple of their songs. I wouldn't call myself a big fan, no. They certainly wouldn't be in my top 25 or top, maybe not even top 50. But I do like a couple of their songs. Yeah, Breaking the Law is a good tune. Not one I mind listening to.
Yeah. Ozzy had some health issues this week, right? But it sounded like he was, unfortunately, on his way out. But it looks like he's rebounded. I think he's kind of breathing on his own.
That's good. I mean, listen, Ozzy was another group by Black Sabbath, or Ozzy solo. Mm-hmm. I like. Mm-hmm. Don't love. I'm not a huge Ozzy fan. I've never.
You
seen
like him better
concert.
Solo or with Black Sabbath?
I probably say solo, but I like Black Sabbath too. It's close. It's not a clear cut for me. Mm-hmm. I like them both. I've got their both a bunch of CDs from both guys, from both bands. But yeah, you certainly hope he's okay. He's a guy who I admit I'm surprised is still alive.
Him and Keith Richards, right? But Keith Richards,
Keith Richards is legally dead in about 37 states.
Yeah, he just looks, he has this tough look to him, though, right? Doesn't look like he's going anywhere, you know?
If you play in a Deadpool, you should be able to collect on Keith Richards.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, you're kind of surprised that Ozzy, thank God he's still around, but. He's really reinvented himself over the years, right? You know, with his MTV shows, and then he has a show, I think, with his son, too, where they travel around and whatnot. So our best wishes to Ozzy Osbourne. I like his music a lot, you know. But, hey, I just want to remind people, we got Ryan Hallam is going to be joining us in the next hour talking about his draft strategy. He's going to be in the Tout Wars draft that takes place tomorrow. It's no trade. It's kind of like a best ball format in fantasy baseball. So hey, we were talking about some of the players that have received some, you know, we started the show with some players that have received some contract extensions. One guy I just wanted to mention, because I want to get your take on him, is Whit Merrifield. eligible at second base and outfield, according to NFBC. Overall, ADP, according to NFBC, is 30, taken with the 29th pick overall by Prospect 361's Tim McLeod, who really knows his stuff. That's the second-to-last pick of the second round of the Labor Draft. That's, remember, that's a 15-teamer. And Merrifield got a four-year, $16.25 million extension last year. 304 batting average, 12 home runs, 60 runs better. And I think he led the majors, not the, well, at least the American League, with 45 stolen bases and had 34 the previous season. So here's the way his works out is he's going to be getting a could this be a million in 19, 25 million, 21, 6.75 million, 22, 2.75 million, and a 23 gets a club option for 10.5 million? Man, talk about, you know, owner friendly. Man, I have to double check because that just doesn't seem right. But
I didn't understand the deal either. I didn't.
Yeah.
For Merrifield goes, I said earlier, if I'm a pitcher, I get it. You know, I understand. All right. I'm signing a deal to protect my long term health and make sure my financial future is secure. If I'm a hitter, especially this deal, I don't understand. Is something going on here that we didn't? The first thing I thought about is there something going on here that we don't know about?
There's
It wasn't enough here for me to sign this deal. I mean, if I was Merrifield, I certainly would have waited. I would have bet on myself more. You know, I don't think it was worth it here. I don't think you got the security that you were really hoping for here. I mean, because you're not making the big money until 4 years down the line anyway.
Yeah.
Right? So you might, if you, that, I guess, at that point, I'm waiting. Bottom line is I wouldn't have signed this deal.
Right, yeah. Cost of living in KC must be pretty cheap, but still, I think I'm worth more than $1 million this upcoming season, especially with the kind of numbers I've put up. And for fantasy, I mean, you know, he's a multi-position eligible and a guy that you could count on probably for at least 30 stolen bases this season. So, but one of the things I was reading about this, and he kind of seemed like he's the kind of guy that if he's got like a arbitration hearing, you know, hanging over his head, it just like weighs on him. So it seemed like he said that, you know, the psychological aspect of signing this extension gave him almost like peace. And I'm paraphrasing, you know, but we'll see. But so what do you think about him? I mean, you look at his 2018 numbers, you know, if you look at the MLB expecting batting average, they say that his 304 average basically is more like, you know, close to 280. Or so, his home runs went down from 19 the season before to 12. Even though his hard hit rate went up from 30 to 36. Interesting note is that he stole more bases in the second half. He had 17 in the first half last season and 28 in the second half. Usually, you know, you got to slow down, especially as a stolen base kind of guy. Hits the ball evenly to all fields. OBP went up based on a little bit better of a walk, walk rate that he had. What are you thinking about Merrifield? And in terms of, is he a guy that you target? You know, is that ADP a little bit too high for you?
Well, I mean, when you're drafting Merrifield, you're drafting him for stolen bases. All right, that's what you're drafting him for. Everything else is gravy.
Yeah.
Anything else he gives you is gravy. I want those stolen bases. You mentioned last 2 years he stole 79 bases. So that's, he's averaging 40 a year. That's fantastic. In this day and age, that's gold. That's just gold. We need that. The fact that he hasn't hurt your average, even better. He might even help your average a little bit. You know, so I'll be interested. The problem for me is this: when I draft, I generally don't draft for stolen bases. Generally, you know, when I'm just taking a pure stolen base guy. When it comes to a draft, I sort of believe in, all right, I'm not going to finish at the top of the first base category, but I don't want to finish at the bottom either. I want to finish somewhere in the middle. You know, I'll make up my point someplace else. So I'm not going to draft
a guy. You
just
want to show up.
Yeah, I want to be average. I just want to be average. I don't want to get 1 point or 2 points. You know, I want to get 5, 6, and I'm a happy guy. I'm a happy guy because that's what I drafted for. I also believe you can find speed during the year. It's easy to find speed. It's easier to find speed during the year than it is power. You know, so I'll draft it later. Now, yeah, we'd all like to draft guys early on that could give us power and speed. You know, that's great if you can do that. You know, obviously, you want Mike Trout, Betts, who's going to steal bases. There's a reason why these guys are first-round picks. You know, Trey Turner, if you can get him, fine. But it's very difficult. But with Merrifield, I mean, if he's still hitting, if you believe he's going to hit 20 home runs, well, then you're taking him. All right, because now he's giving you some power as well. We know a stolen base, we know the average is there. He should score enough runs to make you happy. Not a lot. It's Kansas City. What are you expecting? You know, so I do like the player more than most guys who I would consider speed guys because he's not a complete zero in the other categories. You know what I mean? Right. Sometimes you get these speed guys here, they'll steal bases, but they're going to hit three home runs for you, and they just kill you.
Mm-hmm.
I know with Merrifield I'm getting double-digit home runs. The question is, where am I double digits? What do you believe? If it's 12 again, you know, that puts him probably around 7, round 8 for me. If it's 20, oh, now you're talking around 5. I can even be talking to round 4 because I can take him. He's not going to hurt these other categories, and I know my stolen bases are now locked up. With him alone, I'm guaranteed my middle range. You know, and now I might change my strategy a little bit, Joe, and if I've got him, maybe I add another speed guy to see if I can be on one of the top leaders at stolen bases.
Gotcha. Great analysis. So, I mean, so are you interested in him? I mean, I have him, you know, I was taking a look at his numbers and, you know, expecting all this stuff. And I'm thinking that maybe he could, I mean, he's going to give you a good batting average, probably upper 280 range, maybe to 290. I give him a little bit of an uptick in the home runs because of that hard hit rate going up a little bit. Maybe not the 19 from last year, maybe 14, 15. I have him, you know, maybe lower 30 steals. So, I mean, you know, he's someone that I'd be interested in. Second round, though, I don't know. That might be a little soon.
I can't take him second round. One thing to keep in mind, this is a 15-team league, so, you know, it's 30 picks in the first two rounds. So you can make an argument that he was really a third-round pick, which is getting closer to where I think he should go.
Yeah.
But even then, I'm still – he went, 29th? So that is, in most leagues, the middle of the third round. But I'm a fourth-round guy for him. But one thing before what I said earlier, now he's not really – right now, I wouldn't say he's on my radar because he's going to go earlier, I believe, than where I want him. But as I said, he's there late fourth round. All of a sudden, he slipped me. I have him. This is what I mean by when you have to adjust your strategy. You know, when you can go into a draft with one strategy, but you never know how it's going to play out. You know, you have to be able to adjust on the fly here. And that's what I wouldn't have any plans on drafting Merrifield because I assume he's going to go top 30, top 34 picks. And I don't want to take him to the top, you know, around later, top 45. What if he lasts to me? Well, now I have taken a speed guy. And I mentioned, now I might change my mind and draft another speed guy. Because I've got one, now I can do some damage in that category. So you have to be able to adjust your draft strategy because things worked out differently in your favor, or so you think, than you thought. The opposite can be true as well. You know, for all we know, there's going to be a run on pitching in the first round in some leagues. You know, five starters went. You didn't get a starter.
Right.
You know, like Scott Pianowski. You know, where all these hitters fell to you. You know, Scott, Martinez, Bregman, Benintendi, Correa. They all fell to you. You felt you had to take them. And all of a sudden you're like, well, you know what? I was planning on taking two pitches in the first five rounds. Didn't work out that way. You know, and now you're changing your draft strategy. I, Joe, never go into a draft thinking that I'm going to punt category, that I'm going to punt saves, that I'm going to punt speed. You know, or anything. I never go into that, but that's not to say it can't happen. You know, listen, no closes fell to me. They all went too early. You know, in football, I've never gone into a football draft thinking I'm going to have a zero running back strategy. But it's happened. Where all the running backs flew off the board, wide receivers were always there. I ended up having the 0-0 running back strategy. I didn't go into a draft planning that way, but I adjusted my strategy because of how it played out. Same in baseball, you know, where speed falls to you or speed doesn't fall to you. Saves don't fall to you. Everybody went nuts and took closes in the fourth and fifth round. It happens, and you need to be able to adjust according to what's happening.
Right. And you could take a look at ADPs all you want and just to realize what their average is, right? And each draft that you're part of has a life of its own, and individuals who value different categories of players differently than what the average ADP it was going to, you know, put out there. So you got to be flexible, right? And move with what's happening and just adjust. Yeah, that's
all drafts are different. And as you said, ADPs, rankings, everything is just a tool. There's not one thing that's the Bible. You have to do this.
Right.
No. You take it all together. ADPs, I love ADPs. I love it because it gives me an idea of where a player should go. You know, that Joe Schmo is being taken in the top of round 5 in most leagues. But hey, we all know, A, in home leagues, you know, a player is going to take people you don't expect. You know, guys that make mistakes, mm-hmm. it just happens. So, you know, you can't get all upset about that. It's a tool. You know that, like I said, Joe Schmo is taking, on average, number 52nd overall pick. So don't take him at 24, you know. But right. I also say this. If you really want the player, you know, make then go get him. Fantasy should be fun. If there's a player you like, you love, he's your best player, he's your best, whatever, mm-hmm. then go grab him. You know, I still wouldn't take him at 24, but you want to take him at 36? All right. It's 16 picks below that. That's fine. No one's going to get mm-hmm. on you for that. Big deal. You know, if you, like I said, it should be fun. You got certain players you like, certain teams you like. Fine. But if you want to win, and once again, you follow your tools, you can't let your fandom take over. You and I are Yankee fans. Doesn't mean we're not taking Red Sox players. All right? I want to win these leagues. Yankees don't pay my bills. Mm-hmm. Okay? These fantasy leagues help pay the bills. You know, so I take the best players overall. I don't care if they're on the Red Sox, the Mets, whatever. I want the players that I think are the best. Just the way it is. You know, there are lots mm-hmm. of ways to go about it, but fantasy should be fun. You know, enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a home league, it's not, you know, not big money. If there's certain players you want, go get them.
I agree. And you know, in football, look like, you know, the upcoming season, I definitely want at least one share of Patrick Mahomes. Now, I usually wait till the you know, middle rounds before I take my quarterback. But you know, in a league or two, I might change my tune on that, just because you know, I want to enjoy, you know, having a Patrick Mahomes on my team. And let's go face it, I mean, he may regress a little bit, but he's still going to be a top-notch performer in fantasy coming up. And look, you know, if you're a kind of guy or gal who wants to have a Vladimir Guerrero on their team, just to, you know, just to have fun in his rookie year, and you know he's going to perform as well, you know, get him on your team, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Like I said, you know, like I said, if you're playing in the big money leagues, okay, then you got to take those more seriously. You absolutely do. Mm-hmm. You know, any kind of really money league there. But if it's just your home league, friends and family league, hey, you know, listen, I still take those seriously. I still want to win. But I have no problem with you taking your favorite player. You know, granted, if mm-hmm. you're, you know, you're a Cowboy fan, don't take 10 Cowboys. That's kind of silly.
Right.
And even a great offensive team, don't take 10 of any, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 players. You can't automatically default to your favorite team. But once again, enjoy yourself. Have fun. Baseball is harder to play than football. Football is one day a week. You know, you set your line, you just let it go. Baseball is an everyday sport. You need to pay attention. It's much harder to win a fantasy baseball league than it is a football league. It's just the way it is. But the most important thing for me will always be to enjoy it and have fun. That's why the game was invented.
Hey, in the minute or two we have left to go into commercial, just saw that, you know, a tweet saying that Mattingly, you know, the Marlins going to be bad anyway, but Mattingly says he's not going to be naming a specific closer. It just seems that there are going to be, every year it's more and more teams, maybe like a closer by committee, and in a way, you know, can you blame them? I mean, I know we only have a minute or so left, but you know, how are you going to address the closer position? I mean, are you going to go for, you know, a guaranteed guy, or are you going to try to, you know, get as many pitchers that have the potential? We have a minute left. Potential to become a closer on their team.
Yeah, I saw that tweet too by Mattingly. First thing I thought of was, mm-hmm. well, you're going to win 30 games anyway. I'm not all that worried about it. Marlins are going to be a bad, bad team, boys and girls.
Yes.
I mean, like I said, that's a tough division, and they stripped it down, which is probably the right thing to do, but they didn't get great returns on any of these guys they traded here. Good luck. So I don't, I'm not fretting over Miami. As far as the closer itself, we'll get back to that after the break here and discussing closer strategy here. But the basic thing for me is I want one solid closer. After that, we'll see how the draft goes.
Yep. All right, so when we come back, we'll talk closers. We're going to have Ryan Hallam talking about his Tout Wars draft strategy. And maybe try to break down some positions in fantasy baseball. You're listening to Fantasy Sports Radio Network.